Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McCusick, and we have an interesting short for you today. We're going to talk about some of the indicators for 11 personnel, something Ravens fans, a lot of them have been very interested to see, a heavier use of wide receivers. It appears we may get that this year. Here to discuss that topic with me is Jim Zipko. Jim, how you doing?
Great, Ken. How are you doing?
Always a pleasure having you on. Great to get to talk football with you. It's been a slight hiatus here we've had. The Ravens, I guess a lot of this was triggered from the draft. They draft a wide receiver in round three, then again in round four. And a lot of people are saying, what does it mean? And I think there are a few fairly obvious things, but let's start with your look at it in terms of maybe the roster makeup first before we talk about the package deployment.
So I think that the thing that impresses me the most is the way the draft kind of echoed a cohesive vision that was first sort of revealed or indicated by the coaching staff that was hired. And so I'd kind of like to look at the draft in the context of the staff as two things together. So when Jesse Minter was hiring his staff, the fact that he didn't hire the coordinators first and filled in kind of other positions and the coordinators later, it sort of obscured how cohesive the vision was, right? Like when you get Declan Doyle on the staff and you look at him in context with Joe Lombardi and Marcus Brady, and you see four guys who are on Sean Payton's staff, along with kind of an outside zone guru of an offensive line coach. And all of a sudden it looks like a really cohesive vision. And then you go into the draft and you add two radius wide receivers, two big guys, the kind of receiver that the Ravens have not had. Most of their wide receivers have been of the smaller shifty type. Suddenly I think you're seeing just an amplification of the vision that was sort of indicated by the coaching staff of, lots of three wide receiver sets and a more traditional offense that's less reliant on bigs in the on the field.
I mean, they've said that certainly, and I always say, watch the actions, don't watch the words, when you can, and that's why I tend to report the way I do about things. But I think there are multiple things in play here. I want to talk about some of the roster things first, and then I want to come back to some of the how do these coaches fit in, and as it goes to personnel packages and whatnot. But I think there is a fairly simple explanation for receivers in round three and four that may be at the top of the list, and that is that they have a desire to draft wide receivers and develop them themselves internally. Maybe they believe they can now under the new regime. They've never been able to do it in their history really successfully. Torrey Smith was, I guess, an example of a player they drafted and developed, but they haven't had a lot of success with drafting wide receivers. Obviously, they had a little more success in recent years with Flowers and Marquise Brown, but wide receivers are very expensive. After the first contract, they very high price to retain. They're going through that with Zay right now. Very, very high cost to sign somebody else's wide receiver. Could it be just that simple that they want to keep that stable as healthy and developing as possible to avoid that enormous salary cap cost?
Right. Yeah, I would say that. And I think that there's some reason to trust their in-house wide receiver development more than, and I would like to go back further than the current or even the most immediately previous wide coaching staff. Like there was a time when the Ravens coaching staff was just a wasteland in terms of wide receiver coaches. I mean, at one point they even stashed a future defensive coordinator as wide receiver
coach. Mike Nolan. Yeah.
Yes. So, the attention paid, maybe there was a little overconfidence. And then Harbaugh certainly made an effort to upgrade the wide receiver coaching, whether it was T and Keith, when he brought them in, and then the ex-Chiefs wide receiver coach, Greg Lewis. Yep. And then this current guy that Mentor hired, Kiri Colbert, along with his assistant, Prentice Gill. Colbert has just a stellar reputation in college in terms of the talent that he sent to the pros. So I think there's been longitudinally, you look at it, they've been trying to upgrade the wide receiver coaching for a long time. And I think they have. I think it's been a pretty steady runway. And this guy might well be the best of the lot.
Yeah. So I don't disagree with you. There was for another common thread in past Ravens teams is they've had a very significant willingness to go out and get a veteran wide receiver, as mm-hmm. opposed to spending draft capital. They just, you know, found it easier to go out and get Mike Wallace or, you know, there's a lot of names here. Anquan Boldin is in there too, even though he was one of the really successful ones. Steve Smith was somewhat successful. Obviously, he lost some years to injury, but he was successful for the Raiders.
But always, so, these guys were a little past their salary.
Always
years.
A little past their time. Yeah,
yeah.
And that is typically that's what you get if you want to go out and get, you know, JSN. Then you're going to have to pay the very top dollar in the entire right. market and hope he gets to free agency somehow. And, you know, the teams, whoever's got him is going to try and franchise him first.
Yep.
And then, you know, so you're in a tough situation ever to get a truly prime receiver on a deal, which is why you have to develop these guys and figure out how to, you know, get value from them. But also I think sometimes you could potentially avoid the position as well. The Ravens had an opportunity to do that by drafting Kenyon Sadiq this year in the first round. Mm-hmm. I before the draft, I was slightly favoring a draft of Sadiq over Ioane, because of the salary cap concerns. I've talked about this many times, but you got a chance for a 10-year player with Sadiq. With Ioane, I think the chance is much, much lower that you get a Hall of Fame level career. Well, okay, it probably is going to work out if he's an 85th percentile plus. The problem is going to be if he's between the 65th and 80th percentile, and you don't you have a good player, but you don't have a great player, kind of like with Linderbaum. Mm-hmm. And then you have to make a choice about whether or not to sign the guy, and then you got a bunch of competitors who are willing to sign him for a lot more. And so they could end up in that position with Ioane. I don't think they will if he has a true Hall of Fame career. I think if that's going on, the Ravens will do whatever's necessary. They'll sign him early. They'll do all the things that they do to help lubricate that process.
The things that we've seen with them do with Mark Andrews.
Yeah, they did. They signed Mark Andrews after 3 years, or they signed him after four. I'm trying to remember. Because he wasn't a first round pick. So it had to be after three because it was an early contract and he wasn't a first round pick. So it had to be after three.
That makes sense.
All right. One guy that's impacted by the draft of the two receivers is DeAndre Hopkins. And we talked about the veteran wide receivers, but it does not appear DeAndre Hopkins will be back given how deep this wide receiver room is right now, you know, barring injury.
Mm-hmm. No, I agree with that. And I think, you know, that ties in with what you're telling, what you said about them wanting to develop their own. Yeah. But the interesting thing is, so develop their own, yes, but I don't think they're committed to playing one of these guys right away. Like if it were mm-hmm. me and I was going to deploy a three wide receiver set, if that was my plan to be my primary formation in the offense, I would head into this, you know, the summer workouts, the OTAs, and into training camp with my top three as Zay Flowers, Rashad Bateman, and Tez Walker. Mm-hmm. And I would play Bateman in the slot a lot, you know, maybe alternate him and Zay in the slot. I think Bateman would really flourish in a slot role. And Zay seems to me to be a prototypical Z or Zay receiver. Mm-hmm. Sort of, you know, I would envision him downfield like Steve Smith.
Yeah, I mean, that's the role he's really been cast in so far. It's not like most receivers, they spend some time in the slot. You know, it's mm-hmm. just it's part of, you know, what they're trying to do. But Zay, particularly this last year, uncovered a significant additional value in terms of those crossing routes. And oftentimes that was something that Lamar Jackson really relied on. And I expect that to be a significant part of his game. And the both of these guys that they got, both Surratt and it's really more effective.
Lane
is an outside the numbers kind of a throw the ball up, you go get it kind of guy. And you know, what you're doing is you're making the other team make difficult, forcing them into dilemmas where they either have to single cover that player who could be a real problem for them in terms of being able to take the ball away from a defender, being able to play good defense against a defender, but being a high percentage contested catch guy, or allowing him to draw another defender off and open up the middle of the field more for the Ravens' variety of mid-range weapons that they have. And that's exciting about this. That certainly Hopkins really helped in that regard last year.
Yeah. Yeah. And Lamar's never consistently had that guy, certainly not at the wide receiver position. I mean, he treats his tight ends that way. He certainly treats Mark Andrews as a, you know, throw it up and I'll throw it up and you fight for it kind of receiver, kind of pass catcher, but not at wide receiver typically.
In addition to a smaller role for Tez, obviously the biggest thing that is an indicator that pushes the needle towards a significantly more 11 personnel potentially is the departure of Ricard. Now, let's back this up to basics, because a lot of people completely understand this and you know what 11 and 12 and 13 personnel are. But we're gonna do a little bit of a primer here to talk about this. So the offense has 5 eligible receivers.
Yep.
If you have a fullback on the field, you're using one of your eligible receivers for that fullback slot. In Ricard's case, he rarely ran patterns where he was an intended target or anything really but a check down or alternative target for Lamar. Now, there was an exception that game at Tennessee. They won the game in a lot of ways because they drove right down the field after halftime, making use of Ricard several times and that was in the COVID year, 2020, right? And that, so from that perspective, there's a positive. But I think generally speaking, not having a fullback will mean tight ends line up some in the backfield. It won't be the same. The Ravens never play anybody in the backfield. They will, and they've got multiple options on how to do it. It's just a matter of it'll be somebody else, and it won't be a designated fullback.
Yeah, and the way I want to look at that history is, so they, you go back to the beginning of the Lamar era, and Greg Roman is with us, and the Ravens drafted Hayden Hurst and Mark Andrews, mm-hmm. and they had Nick Boyle on the team. And I guess they had Ricard on the team, and some of these guys were too good to leave off the field. They played Nick Boyle something like 60% of the snaps in 2018 and 19. And he was just a pure blocking tight end. You go into like 2021, 22, you've got Ricard really coming into his own into a ton of offensive snaps. And by 22, 23, 24, you see a weak interior offensive line where not only do they need a fullback to help open a holes for their running backs, but Ricard made himself indispensable at a time when they were not getting a great play from their interior O-line. I remember Todd Monken's first game as offense coordinator against Houston, the Texans were just really giving the Ravens fits with their pass rush, and Monken finally brought in Ricard, and Ricard kind of cleaned stuff up by just being in the backfield with Lamar and picking up free rushers and whatnot. His pass blocking to a shocking degree enabled the offensive success. He was unsung one of the most important Ravens. So they gave up an eligible downfield receiver to have this hero in the backfield help out with their blocking when they really needed it. Well, now they've let him walk, and it's really a new era. They've got to get the pass blocking done with their offensive linemen, like Iwane. But they're adding an eligible, and I want to frame it as, they've consistently over the years had an excess of quality big personnel, whether it was Hayden Hurst and Mark Andrews and Nick Boyle, or it was Mark Andrews and Isaiah Likely and Patrick Ricard. They had bigs who were better than the other people that they could put on the field, and they had to use them. And now a lot of that quality big depth is gone, and they are backfilling it with more wide receivers.
We certainly hope that's true. It would be a very bad revelation for the 2026 Ravens if all of a sudden Durham Smythe is too good to be kept off the field relative to their other players.
Yes.
That would be a very bad thing.
That would be.
I'm sure he'll play some snaps this year. I'm sure we have it roll. Josh Cuevas, again, he was, by the way, Cuevas was at the podium yesterday at rookie camp. So we're recording this on Sunday. This should be out on Monday. But one of the things about Cuevas is they got him. He's more of an inline player than a lot of the other tight ends that were draft eligible or at the top of the draft rankings, including Hibner, who's a 22% inline guy. And Cuevas, I think, was over 50 at Alabama. Mm-hmm. In any case, one of the things he talked about was playing against Zion Young against Missouri.
Yes.
And he said, you know what? He's got a deep bag of tricks. He can do, he has a spin move. He has a push-pull move. He has this, he has that. And what was impressive about that is you don't talk about a guy like that unless you're into pass blocking, unless you're making a commitment to understanding pass blocking. So sure, Zion Young. This show is sponsored by BetterHelp.com. For some, summer is their favorite season. Travel picks up, kids are out of school, and adventure is the focus. For others, juggling it all can be tough. It can make you feel overwhelmed, and can make you count down the minutes until the kids are back in school. I know I look forward to summer as a time to take a break, but as a self-employed person, time spent away from my work is time I stress over wasting. That's where BetterHelp comes in. BetterHelp is a quality therapist who work according to a strict code of conduct and are fully licensed in the U.S. BetterHelp does the initial therapist matching for you so you can focus on your therapy goals. A short questionnaire helps identify your needs and preferences, and their 12-plus years of experience and industry-leading match fulfillment rate means they typically get it right on the first time. If you aren't happy with your match, switch to a different therapist at any time. With over 30,000 therapists, BetterHelp is the world's largest online therapy platform, having served over 6 million people globally, and it works. With an average rating of 4.9 out of 5 for a live session based on 1.7 million client reviews. You don't have to say yes to everything this summer. Find support in therapy. Sign up and get 10% off at betterhelp.com. That's betterhelp.com. Gave me some trouble. I'm not concerned about that. Not really. Although, you know, the NFL, he'll face a lot of players that are as good as Zion Young, unfortunately. But what's really important about it is that Cuevas seems to really have a knack for understanding pass blocking that I really appreciate about this. And they couldn't do it without that. They couldn't have Durham Smythe be their only real guy who could block. They need to have somebody. They need to have a blocking guy. They need to have a block slash move guy. And then they can have two flex guys if that's the way they want to do it. And Hibner is he's just a pure flex guy who'll be an Andrews replacement, I would expect, when Mark is done. He also, if you look at his tape, he derived a lot of value from Jennings, the SMU quarterback, who has some similarities to Lamar Jackson. He's a mobile, extend the play kind of quarterback, kind of smallish, moves around well, throws the ball downfield. But one thing you notice from Hibner is a lot of his big plays came on these seam routes where he just basically runs directly down the field. There's some sort of play action or some sort of movement in the backfield, and the safety or the player responsible for Hibner loses their focus, and Hibner is all of a sudden 5 or 6 yards behind the defense. It wasn't simple speed. I mean, Hibner's a reasonably fast for a tight end at about 450, 451, right. He's in the 4.5s anyway.
Yeah.
But he's not a burner. He's not a guy who's going to run away from defenses after the catch. Mostly he was picking up a lot of a big yak number that he had by the fact that he was 5 yards open. And I think there's something we can draw from that is that Lamar Jackson is still, you know, potentially a guy who can get his tight ends open by his own movement. And hopefully the offensive line being a little better and him being a little less hurt will make that easier in 26.
Do you think that so Lamar has always preferred throwing to the middle of the field over throwing to the sidelines. And I don't think that's simply a reflection of arm strength or accuracy or even personnel. I think that he processes the middle of the field extremely well.
Yes.
And he also, as you say, influences the middle of the field with his own movement. I cannot tell you when I was looking at Lamar's mechanics a couple of years ago, it was really striking to see how often he is looking off a linebacker to complete a throw in the middle of the field. So he sets up, and when I say looking, I don't mean looking. I mean, he's got his feet and his body positioned to throw, let's say, 45 degrees to the left. Mm-hmm. And so the coverage linebacker drifts to Lamar's left, and without moving his feet, Lamar throws it 45 degrees to the right. So
upper body pivoting to get some of that done.
Right. So a huge part of his game is based on moving guys with his body positioning and his eyes more. So that adds to a player like Hibner, a middle of the field and up the seam guy. I think when you say that reveals that is intended to still be part of Lamar's game. That's kind of foundational to Lamar's game, I think.
Yeah. When Lamar's healthy, no doubt about it. Has all the ability to pick apart the middle of the field. And we've enjoyed that for all of his years in Baltimore.
I think it's easy to devalue, right? Because I think that people look at that as a failure to take advantage of the outsides rather than a huge strength of his play, like something he can do that a lot of other quarterbacks cannot.
Right. It'd be very hard to do that rationally. And to call Lamar Jackson, well, he's just this dink and dunk middle of the field quarterback. You know, if it's play action, then he's fine. If it's not, then the pass rush gets to him. I mean, the statistics tell a completely different story about who Lamar Jackson is as a quarterback, including the greatest passer rating of all time.
Yeah.
And, you know, including, you know, a lot of things that people don't give him credit for. But Lamar's legs, very important that they're back, and he's a healthy player this year, because that obviously was a significant problem last year. I'm not blaming him for the injuries, by the way. In a lot of cases, the offensive line was responsible for some additional hits on him. So the Ravens, by whatever means, need Lamar Jackson to be healthy. It's just absolutely critical. I did want to say this. Now, we talked about where you use your additional read-up player on whatever percentage of snaps your fullback used to play. Mm-hmm. Additional eligible receiver. Another case is a potential use of more pony backfield. So, yeah, more 11. Yeah, well, I think we're headed in that direction, certainly. But could this be we see more pony now? And it was much more difficult to put pony in when Ricard was the other option, because it was too good a run option and too good an upgrade to the run to use, say, Mitchell and Henry at the same time.
Right. Talked about going back to fundamentals when we talk about personnel, and just this is probably useless for the listenership of your podcast, but just for the record, you got five offensive linemen on the field and one quarterback. The other five players are the eligibles. The first number is the running back. The second number is the tight end. And the unstated number is the wide receivers. Yep. And it's whatever's left over from five. So 1-1 personnel or 11 personnel, 5 - 2 = 3. It's three wide receivers. Pony is the first number is a 2. So that's two running backs. So 2-0 is two running backs, no tight ends, three wide receivers. 2-1 is, you know, two wide receivers. So that's what we're talking about when we talk about pony.
It's 100% correct. And I just want to make one important distinction here. There are sort of two personnel groupings. One is the apparent personnel grouping.
Yes.
In that case, you use the roster positions for the players because that's what the opposing defensive coordinator sees in the huddle and has to make his substitutions based on. So if you have three tight ends on the field and one running back, that's 13 personnel, regardless of how they end up lining up. And they might line up split, they might line up whatever. And then, you know, there are people who look at it and say, here's the actual, what they ran. And it might be 22 personnel, even though you had three tight ends on the field because they put one of them in the backfield.
Right. Or if Devin Duvernay motions into the backfield to become a running back, like, you know, we consider him a wide receiver, but formationally it's going to be, So he's exactly right.
So, but typically when I'm discussing it, I'm talking about the apparent grouping because that's
the
really
roster,
what's important
to
the opposing defensive coordinator to make his choices. And obviously whenever you have tight ends on the field, immediately creates problems for the opposing defensive coordinator because he has less information about exactly what you're going to do in terms of how you line up and whatnot. And he has to deal with the risks of a run play to a greater degree, and particularly when you're in a kind of a neutral down and distance or game script situation, and that's actually a real option, then that becomes more valuable to the offense to have multiple tight end sets.
Yes. Okay.
All right, and that is oftentimes, by the way, when you see third and long, you get away from multiple tight end sets typically. Now, that's not to say Andrews and Likely weren't in there a lot on such downs, but the reason for that was because they were two of the better receivers. It wasn't because they're trying to make use of them as tight ends. All right, so we had pony backfield as one potential use. Now, let's go to another possibility is that the Ravens, they like their wide receivers. They like to develop their wide receivers, but they also want to play more 12 and 13 because the tight end group is very deep. And they see a lot of opportunity for that, particularly with their other personnel, with Jackson, to make use of 12 and 13 personnel. Do you think that might mute the increase of 11 that we see? Or do you think the Ravens already played a bunch of 12 and 13, so they probably won't play any more than they did in the last several years?
I don't think that there's any chance that in 2026 they play remotely as much multiple tight end sets as they have in recent years. Now, I said that on Twitter, and Dev Panchwa, who knows his stuff, disagrees with me. Sharp guy, you know, so I'm not right about everything. But there's no chance to me that Durham Smythe and two rookie tight ends are as good as Isaiah Likely and Charlie Cole are. That's just not that.
It's a good way to look at it.
Yeah. And so to me, you know, the most dangerous grouping right now that I see for opposing defenses to deal with is Mark Andrews, Zay Flowers, Rashad Bateman, Tez Walker, and Derrick Henry. Yep. And I would go with that five out the gate and make the defense prove that they can stop me. Now, that doesn't mean that Jacoby Lane or Surratt isn't going to win a job, isn't going to beat, you know, Tez Walker out in training camp or force Rashad Bateman off the roster, or who the hell knows? You know, maybe they're awesome. But starting today, you know, rookie tight ends take a while to develop. It's a difficult position. It's a very physical position. Play is very fast in the middle of the field. It's rare that a rookie tight end is awesome. And, you know, I don't see it as the way to bet. Let's put it that way, going into the 2026 season. Yeah. Now, I could see those guys, you know, Cuevas and Hibner developing, you know, so maybe in 2027, 2028, we're looking at something different. You know, maybe those guys emerge as players who have to get playing time because they're too good, but I don't see that for this season.
Okay. I think your logic is good there. I think that, you know, the wide receiver position has been more upgraded than the tight end position. And the tight end position has been slightly downgraded.
Yeah.
And that would lead you to believe, hey, we'll probably have more 12 and 13. It doesn't necessarily answer the pony backfield thing.
No.
And I guess the really extreme question I want to ask is, do you think there's any chance the Ravens occasionally go to 10 personnel given the very deep tight end group they have? And when I say occasionally, I mean, I'm not talking about eight times a season. I'm not talking about, you know, on even 2% of offensive plays. That would be, to me, that would be almost trivial to do that. I mean, you pick up enough of those opportunities in catch up time, you know, catch up garbage time oftentimes, where you might want to do that. But do you see it as anything they'll use in a kind of a neutral game script? Yeah.
10 personnel, so no tight ends, 4 wide receivers.
And a running back, yep.
I think it's possible if Lane or Surratt really emerge, and certainly if Andrews has some physical limitations as he seemed to at the beginning of was it last season or the season before. I could see that. I think that it's one of Andrews' strengths on this roster is his mental connection with Lamar. They see the field the same way. And he's a security blanket in a way that another player isn't going to be, even Zay Flowers. So I would think that Andrews would be a critical part of any real competitive game script situations. But, you know, if one of the new wide receivers emerges, and Tez Walker is what, you know, I kind of hope he is, then, yeah, I could see some 10.
Okay. All right. And that's something not too many teams in the NFL have played a lot, but if you want to see a team that almost plays it never, it'd be the Baltimore Ravens for the last, you know, 8 to 10 years or so. Jim, always a pleasure.
I could see a slight uptick in 4 wide receiver sets. I don't see a huge uptick in it today.
Yeah. Well, I don't either. That's really the question. Would it get north of, say, 2% of snaps or something? The Arizona Cardinals in 2019 played something like 22 snaps of 10 personnel against the Ravens. And they were an very unusual team in terms of having a lot of wide receiving talent and wanting to let them kind of run free and have Kyler Murray, you know, get them the ball. But they have not faced, not too many times have they faced such a team over the years and been forced into some sort of defense that was different to cover it. So it'd be an interesting thing. You know, part of what you do is you want to look at the opponent. And you want to find out what team is really short on corners.
Mm-hmm.
So what team only has 3 corners they can field, period? And you know, one of them is nursing an injury and has a, you know, a hamstring or something he's working with. And so they really only have 2.5 corners, and they're going to need a whole lot of help over the top to cover wide. Well, there's the time you pull out 10 personnel.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Yeah. All right. Jim, always a pleasure talking football with you. Thanks so much.
Ken, I appreciate the invite so much. It's great to talk with you again, too.
Where could people hit you up if they have a question on Twitter?
So I'm at @zip_Jim on Twitter, or you can find me by looking at whoever liked some of Ken's most recent tweets. And I'm also on Substack at Zip Drive and Dish. which is mostly my Raven-centric stuff with some other sports thrown in.
Okay, fantastic. And all free currently on Substack currently?
Say that again?
It's free on Substack currently.
It is free on Substack currently. I'm not professional enough to charge more than like 50 cents a month, and they don't offer a subscription options that low.
All right. Well, great. I appreciate having you on here. Some great thoughts, Jim. Other folks out there, please use hashtag film study mailbag with your questions. I'll try and get them on the appropriate short. On the appropriate short on another pod, or ask you to do a pod with me, which might be another, or potentially do a 1 to 3 minute video if it's an explanation type thing. And I'd like to do more of those if people have things that need to be explained. So hit me up with those. Jim, thanks again for coming on.
Thank you.
And we'll talk to you next time on Film Study.